This is the Kids Health Network, the health and psychology podcast for parents and carers of children.
The Kids Health Network is brought to you by GP and my daddy, Dr. Andrew Leach. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
My next guest is Donna Moala. Did I say that right?
I did. Oh, good.
Like
Koala with an M.
From Bub to Sleep. Donna comes highly recognised and highly recommended to me for her work as a sleep consultant around Australia. I know you do online work as well as face-to-face work here in Western Australia. She utilises her own experiences raising three children, as well as the Sleep Sense method, which we are going to discuss today. I know personally as well, sleepless nights with a child who refuses to settle can be like torture. And sometimes it feels like there's no way out from that. The impact this has on parents can be very stressful. So today we are going to explore tips and advice that may be able to help you on the journey. But if you feel overwhelmed, as I always say, and you need further help, please check in with your GP. Thanks for joining me today, Donna.
Wonderful. Thank you for asking me to be on here today.
No problem. Great to have you here. And thanks for coming all the way out to my little work office here. So I want to start by maybe telling us a bit about yourself and what drove you to become interested in this very unique area of sleep training.
Well, I have three children of my own, like you were saying. My eldest is 15, 12 and 9. Going into first-time parent 15 years ago, doesn't feel that long ago, my biggest concern was sleep, which is crazy because there's so much else to worry about. But I researched a little bit of sleep. So I thought if I can get sleep, I can cope being a parent. So back in the day, there wasn't a lot of Google. Well, there wasn't Google. I had a book, and that book gave me a little bit of an idea of what to expect. So that reduced my anxiety because, again, on reflection, I used to worry about lots of things quite a lot, and having things in control a little bit erased that anxiety. So going into the excitement of having a baby, me having the idea of age-appropriate wake times and how often they might need to feed and the things that we might encounter helped me. So 15 years ago, had a book, and then my three children have been my best work experience ever because we've travelled, they've been sick, I've had surgery, but sleep was always priority for me, number one. So I did that. And then when my littlest was going to full-time school, I thought, how can I help parents? Because it is the biggest change of your life ever. There's other things, but that's one of the biggest things. And sleep is so important. Major. And I feel that if you can get sleep, you can tackle a lot of the day. So then I started researching, and I found that I could become a sleep specialist. And I thought, wow, that's amazing, because I was so involved with it with my children. I did a lot of research because I didn't want to have to leave the children, the babies. I never left them. Mm-hmm. I knew it was a biological need, but a lot of the methods were leaving the babies, like cried out or increments of leaving, and I didn't want to do that. So I did a lot of searching, and then long story short, found Dana Olbermann, who is the Sleep Sense guru, in America, and all the stars aligned. And in the time that I had chosen to look at possibly doing that, she came to Australia to train 10 people. So I went and did that. And then it was lots of study. I continue to study. I find it just so interesting about sleep and the science behind it. I'm still affiliated with her, and that's how I started. So she's been, if you want me to talk about Sleep Sense, because I think that's amazing.
Yeah, we will.
You want me to ask?
Yeah. Okay, good. That's good. There's two things that came from that. Right. So one is that you said we kind of go from structure in our lives as, you know, pre-children to kind of chaos, you know, like there's no preparation for that. And that's how I often describe it to parents. You know, you have a really good organization, you have a good idea about what's going on, and if you have a science background, it's even harder because you love things to line up. And then we go to this no rules apply kind of scenario. We don't know you know, what could happen next. Each night's different, each day's different. And so that's what drives a lot of anxiety when you're dealing with this sleep, and then it interplays with how your child handles it as well. So that was one thing that you were, reflecting on what you just said. The other thing that's really interesting, you said there's science behind it. I find it really hard to research this area. So really? What's the science?
Oh my gosh. I'm I'm a sleep nerd. Like in my spare time, I read about sleep. So they are huge universities throughout the world, as you would know, just focusing on sleep. So it's just so intriguing. And they do the testing on humans. Like, so you've got a baby's sleep. Obviously, there's all biological requirements there. But by 6 months of age, a baby's sleep patterns adult-like. I mean, that's crazy. Mm. You would think, really, a little baby like that. Mm. But it is basically people in labs being woken and looking through all the sleep cycles, and it's just mind-boggling. The amazing thing with what I'm able to do with children is a lot of people call me like, am I a psychic? But it is biological. So we set up everything that needs to be set up. We provide support to the babies, and biologically, really, sometimes very quickly, the babies are sleeping well. Because it's.
So, what do you mean by the term biological? So, what are you trying to help children with? That is biological. What is that?
So, for requirements, as we talk about really simply, if you're going to have a newborn baby, biologically they need to be sleeping every 45 minutes to an hour, right? Some babies come out screaming, find that really hard. Mm-hmm. But even if that's on you, so that's a requirement that they need. They need that sleep every hour.
Okay.
Up until 3 months of age, it can still be every hour and a half to 2 hours. So biologically, that's what they require, as much as they would need regular feeds. So that sounds simple, but that's basically what they need biologically. And then as they grow by month, they have biological requirements of age and hours awake, and that over their sort of little life expands. Mm. So, but when I work with clients, because I really am passionate one-on-one, I might have 4 9-month-old little boys that start on the same night, that biologically they need the same amount, approximately 3 hours wake time. They'll all be different because they're all born individual little humans. So we've got the biological requirements like that, but then we also personally have to provide that parental support. And the biggest thing for me is if I can give the knowledge to the parents, then the knowledge is the power that they can go, okay, well, I've kind of got this. All right. Mm-hmm. They need to feed every few hours and they need to sleep then. Well, then that's great. So it doesn't have to be complex. Mm-hmm. It's just what they require. And sleep is where they grow, immunity growth. Everything happens during sleep for little babies, toddlers and humans.
Yeah. No, it's the basic fact of life, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And maybe that alludes to the next question. Like what is... Just wait for this knob. Wait for the noise to pass. That probably goes on to our next question, which is what is normal? Is there a normal? Is there such thing as a normal sleep routine for a baby? Because I know that's what parents come in with to me. They say, am I meant to be waking my baby throughout the night? Is it, why aren't they doing their 45-minute cycles? Yeah. And why aren't they feeding overnight? And sometimes I just say, well, they're... That's them. That's their personality. Mm. Are they growing? Yes. Okay, that's good. Yes, so we're on to a tick with the first point. And then if they're sleeping through the night, well, congratulations. Yes, it's don't wake them. Right. But is there such a thing as what you'd expect as a very baseline for kids, babies? Oh. I guess it depends on age too.
Yes. So very much in, like you were saying, individual babies, because some babies have pain, proper reflux, or they'll come out with sore shoulders or something like that. So there's all of that you've got to think about. Normal for me is, because I love, again, what I do, I think every baby would benefit from understanding their sleep requirements. So there is no norm, no, but if someone was going to choose to work with me, then the norm would be we'd get better sleep. So I work with newborns being 0 to 12 weeks. Now, it's not sleep training. It is sleep support for the families. So for a bub who hasn't got reflux or colic, that would be maybe 2 to 3 feeds per night and some regular naps during the day. That would be the norm. So when you have a thriving baby who has got their wet nappies, growing, smiling, all those things, then yes, there is sort of realms of norm. But then when you've got babies in pain, you know, sometimes they're screaming 20 odd hours a day with their reflux, I don't feel that that's normal. I think that's beyond normal, but you can still, you know, provide them with food and sleep, really. Mm. But it does get so confusing for everyone because there is no norm, definitely not. But around sleep, I can definitely get everyone sleeping well and giving them the knowledge. And for me, only the last few months have I really sort of hit social media to get all of this out, and I'm getting great feedback because it's knowledge. And they're like, oh, my goodness, I didn't know about that. Oh, thank you for that. Now my baby's sleeping a bit better. And it changes all the time.
Yeah, one of the amazing things I thought when you discharge from hospital, no one tells you. They say, good luck, go home.
And you know, the thing that I say to everyone, there's actually nothing really you can do wrong. If you're feeding and their baby's in a loving, supportive family, you're going to have nothing left, but the baby's getting provided what they need.
And some people are just unlucky. They provide those perfect environments of love and food and warmth and nappy changes, yet their baby is crying, over the top crying. Yeah. So I think I heard a stat somewhere, 30% of babies are unsettled. That's probably now outdated, that stat.
Probably
80%. So you've talked about how you can come in sometimes and make some adjustments. What would be some of those things that you would do with families? How would you work on some of these things with families?
The biggest thing for me is I always start biological requirements. So that is age appropriate wait times, absolutely, is number one. I go from there, but then the sleep environment, always following SIDS guidelines. So that is nothing in the cot, everyone needs to look at what that is. I'm sure they all know, but super safe environment, trying not to co-sleep, because obviously some people get so fatigued, they do, but you don't recommend that. But really is a safe environment. The other thing is, you've got to practice. So if that baby wakes up, comes out, and it's quite an unsettled bubs and it needs lots of cuddles, that's fine. But you've got to practice in the bassinet. So you've got to think about a little bit into the future, that if your baby in the first 3 months only sleeps on you, that baby will only sleep on you in a 24-hour period. So my biggest tip would be practice off you, practice in a pram, but that age-appropriate wait time. You know, they're all on my website and stuff if people are trying to find out what's right, because I'll put mine up and people will say, well, that sleep specialist says this amount of time, and I'm like, well, okay, you've got to pick one and follow one. But age appropriate wait time in a really good environment. The first 4 to 6 weeks doesn't really matter if they're in the pram or out in the lounge room. By about 6 weeks of age, there's all these developmental leaps. We would really start to get them to sleep off you a little bit on the pram.
You'd say get through those first 6 weeks as best you can with whatever strategies you can use that are safe, as you said, with SIDS rules and things. For those parents who want to go sort of more towards the structure early on, is that okay too?
Yes.
Yeah. So they could look at we did that too. So would you use you recommend a bassinet straight up?
Yep.
And how long for?
Bassinet again is a size thing. So, okay. Look, I'm not that fond of the co-sleepers because they're right next to you. Mm. But if that's what you want, that's fine. But as they get a little bit older, every developmental stage, they just become more aware. So particularly by about 4 months of age, if they're in your room with you, you'll be accidentally waking them and vice versa. But SIDS recommend in your room. But again, I could never have my children in my room because I was so loud. And every night, first baby, put the baby in your room and they were out on the first night. So it's a real personal preference with that. Again, getting back to SIDS, that the environment of the bassinet's safe. But for me, in the bassinet's fine, but if you're not getting the sleep, maybe they need to be in their own space, but in a safe bassinet. Mm. Bassinet's up to about 3 to 4 months when the babies are going to start rolling. So again, it's a safety thing for 4 months. If they start getting onto their side or moving too much in there, you need to get them into the cot.
Okay. I'm often saying that to patients who talk about, there's a snoring partner or the baby's grunting all night and the parents are just sitting there awake watching for a problem. So it's okay to start shifting them into their own environment. Yes. If you're okay with that. Yeah. So I guess it was within your comfort. Yeah. And that environment's a low stimulating, low dark, not lots of mobiles hanging over the head. Blankies. So say that you have to come in these early stages. Do you give parents strategies? I've heard all sorts of strategies. Like, do you teach them, if the baby keeps waking up through the night, do you teach them how to resettle, for example? And what are some of the things that Sleep Sense talk about?
So the other thing to it, obviously there's a lot behind it when I work with people, but the whole idea going into providing support for sleep is them trying to master independent sleep skills. I mean, that's big words for a little baby, but it is, I liken it to everything as a parent. Breastfeeding doesn't come easy. at all. Well, some people might, but I've never heard that. It takes time. We have to practice if that's the way it is, or bottle. It takes a little while. We can't do it for them. We help them, but we can't feed that. They're doing it for themselves, sort of thing, like walking, feeding, food. We practice, but we don't do it for them. Sleep's the same. So if we're giving too much support to them, and it could be dummy, bottle, rocking, music, a whole lot of different things, then that's what I call being aided to sleep. So they're requiring someone else to do it for them. But what we're trying to do in their little years is that they can go in their cot and you can give them a kiss and you can walk out. So that's independent sleep skills. So firstly, it would be looking at all of those, which could be lots of different things. So again, getting back to going in there is, when you go in there, if it's not the feed time, again, what age ever the baby is, for how many feeds it might need at night, yes, it's hands-on support. But thinking you've got to be intermittent with that. So, you know, rubbing of the stomach, belly, hands off, singing a song, stopping. So everything you're doing to try and support that baby is that you're there lovingly giving those boundaries, but you're not doing it for them. Mm. Does that make sense?
Mm. Mm. Mm.
So always being there for them.
Yeah.
But even like a pickup's fine, but trying to get them down a little bit awake. Mm. So then they can come in and out of those sleep cycles and not need you.
Mm. Yeah.
They have to do it themselves.
Okay. Yeah, so it depends what works for that baby.
Yes.
And what you're comfortable with.
That's
doing.
Right.
And
but always being there for them.
Do you just keep going over and over until they fall asleep in the room with a song and a rubbing and tucking
and
in?
And it's really hard because some babies get really frustrated that you're there.
Yeah.
So then we might need to do a little bit of a leave and check. So, right, they're fine. You know, whatever. If they're over 7 months of age, you might give them their teddy back, tell them it's okay. You might leave for a couple of minutes, you know. But normally my method and the Sleep Sense method is you stay with them, you know. When people work with me, though, it is 2 weeks unlimited support. So it's very personalised to that baby. But the whole thing of it is looking, are they going independently down? So is it dummies, a big one, bottles, breastfed?
What, good or bad? We shouldn't
yeah,
say good.
Yeah, I know,
or
good or bad. In regards to sleep, so again, I was just talking to someone on the way here who it was going beautifully and the baby was fed to sleep, rocked to sleep, and then slept 12 hours. Mm. Awesome. That's what I say to everyone. If it's working, don't change it. But then he got to the 8-month progression, I call it, and then it's gone haywire. But what was happening, like I explained to her, is she was doing it for him. So she was helping him go to sleep. So then he's waking and then requiring some help. Again, I always like to reflect on adult sleep because it's so similar. It would be like, as an adult, someone has to put you to sleep. You have to wait for someone. And then your doona fell off and you woke in a light stage of sleep and you had to wait for that person to put that doona on. That's what's happening with the babies.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
And I always get parents to reflect on their sleep because everyone loves sleep and everyone has their way of going to sleep, the best way to get their best sleep. It's the same. Okay. So we're just providing that support so they can learn this amazing biological skill.
Mm.
That's how I look at it.
Yeah, that's good. Mm. And I guess at different ages they have different things that work.
Yes.
So the 8-month-old might need... might not want a song or a padding. It might need something different. Might even need a cuddle, I guess. I don't know. And I know my kids, even older than that, 4 and 6, they need me to sit there for a few minutes. I mean, I don't... it's hard to separate that. When are we crossing over and actually helping them sleep and when are we letting them learn to sleep?
Yeah.
That's actually
really
hard for me to understand.
Yeah.
It
is. And like I said, there's so much behind it. And it takes time. Things aren't linear. Like I talk about support training, it's everyone these days kind of expects, right, what we're working with you and this is supposed to happen. Well, we had this great night, why is it crap tonight? But that's not, our bodies don't work like that. You know, it takes a while. But the other interesting thing talking about little bigger kids is the boundary pushing. So when it comes to nighttime, what's interesting, if you're having a rough time, is that somehow we get really guilt-ridden and feel really bad that it's at nighttime. But really, it's like a tantrum at night. Then how would you deal with a tantrum in the day? If you didn't want to give them a lollipop, you'd be quite stern and you'd have your boundaries. Sleep's no different. But what happens is at nighttime, we melt and we're like, oh, you want daddy to cuddle you or, you know, sit here for a bit or... So it's a little bit behavioural, it's a whole lot of stuff. But again, getting back to the 8 months of age, you know, we look at what's happening there and they end up sort of having a little bit of anxiety, separation, things that happen. So there are so much biological stuff going on around their days. But I always look at it that, and again, I've had my three children and I've had lots of experience with lots of families now, is if they can master those independent skills, even teething doesn't really affect their night sleep. It will affect their days because they'll be grumpy as, and they might wake once for a bit of teething gel, but once they've mastered that sleep, they sleep. It's like amazing. It is like magic. A miracle.
It is. Yeah. What does the research say around crying? Because you said crying, you know, babies can cry, it's okay to let them go for a little bit. Like, is there a guideline around how long? It's a sensitive topic. And there are definitely methods out there that turn more towards letting that child cry themselves to sleep. And I know that I've seen and heard of those. And, you know, I don't want to go down that path today. No, but is there a research around that at the moment? Or is it just saying, listen to your child and give them a chance to settle? But if it's not working, go back.
Yes. You know? Yeah, so it is a bit of a touchy subject. But not touchy, but controversial maybe, and there's always research about it, isn't there? Well, there are stuff about they're definitely going down the path because people get really stressed about cortisol increase and will it change the baby's brain. There's lots of research on that, and it will not. The cortisol changing, you know, and you would know this, cortisol levels that change any makeup in a brain is when they've been abused, needs not met, not fed, you know, terrible stuff that these children that we're all working with aren't living in that experience. That is the damaging, brain-changing stuff. You know, cortisol levels are higher when they start daycare or when they start school. So in regards to crying, it is their way of communication. We don't like it. It sends something in our bodies to go a bit crazy. But they will cry, and they will cry for change. But you just go with your parental instinct. You can always be there for them, but you've got to let them have a little bit of time. So if there's a little bit of crying going on, let them be. But if you're upset, go in. Because I just always felt that all the things I've been through as a parent, and there's been some pretty awful ones, I was always there for them. And that must have made them feel better. That's what I think too. Mm. But they've done lots of research on brain wave and stuff with sleep training, or this sort of sleep training where you're always with them and it's just not a very high level. But they're going to be annoyed, but it's not a damaging level, no.
Yeah, so that's my understanding, is that babies aren't harmed by crying. No. It's not harmful to them.
No.
If you have to go and have a shower, go and have a shower. And
then they're safe.
They're safe. Course, yeah. They're safe. Yeah. And their essential needs have been met.
Absolutely.
So you've checked in on that. If you need time out, it is really important to look after yourself. Yeah, and that goes on to my next question, is like, what impact have you seen this having on families when you go in and you're probably going in at the tipping point? Mm-hmm. What sort of things do you see?
Oh, it's really sad, actually. Yeah. And it really drives me to come and do more of these things and be understanding that there's things out there to help you, because I see lots of, well, I've, you know, I'm very careful with postnatal depression because that's not my area, but obviously being through so much myself, you can see if people are struggling. Definitely by the time people get to me, they're at their, they've had enough. I'm very supportive for them. I think that's what I pride myself in, that they have the unlimited access for me, with me, for that emotional support. But everyone's exhausted. You know, it affects their marriages. You know, one in particular over East, because I can help worldwide, exactly the same. That poor family were just at, they'd been to other sleep schools, other sleep specialists. They were concerned that was behaviourally something wrong with the child. They were going to go down that track. The husband had left like four jobs. He couldn't work. Like, so many destitute stuff. But, and it took a little bit longer than normal, but she learned how to sleep. And it changed their whole lives, you know. And I see that all the time. Mums feeling not themselves, probably never suffered from anxiety, but are feeling actually a little bit crazy, guilty. Marriages, you know, husbands on the couch all the time, or, you know, partners on the couch. So that's literally all of them, you know. But I'm just, really passionate. I just feel that if you can get sleep, then everything falls back into place.
Step one is recognize also, this is a hard time. It's one of the hardest times of your life. As you said at the start, it's not really easy for anyone. You're lucky if it is, but it's a hard time. So you recognize that, okay, we just have to do one day at a time. We just have to do what we can, the bare minimum, that what we can to get through each day and function as a family. And it's it may not be the happiest time you envisioned before, you know, that was, you thought this was going to be an amazing, beautiful, you know, period in this first few weeks. Well, may not be. That's okay to recognize that as well, and and say, all right, better times ahead. We will provide that loving environment and do what we can, and we will get help if we need it. If we, if you think it is just too much for me, get help, reach out, talk to someone. There's lots of services now, and GPs are a good starting point for that. So we talked about the sleep sense method in different aspects. Did you want to describe it in any other way, the sleep sense method that you've been trained in?
I want to talk a little bit about the reason why I chose it, because I talk so highly of Dana Olbermann, who's the founder. So I think it's been 16 years now. And what I loved about her is her background was child psychology. So she did child psychology, then she did early childhood, then she had her own baby that didn't sleep. And she was like, this is not normal. And so she's so passionate about it. And like, I call her my Oprah, my sleep Oprah. But she's always learning too. You know, she's never stopping. And I just find, you know, she was amazing. So that's what I liked, the science behind it and the psychology behind it, because it's all intertwined, I think, with sleep. But I just loved that if it's something that you're going to implement, that you don't have to leave them. That's what I loved. I mean, there's so much involved with it, and behind every family that I work with, because it's all personalised. But the biggest thing is you don't ever have to leave them. I think really people are very upset to the thought of having to leave their baby to cry, and that's not what I do. So that's probably the biggest thing to say.
Yeah, you teach them to be independent sleepers.
Yes. So we're sort of, so it's like, so so again, in a nutshell, with the 2 weeks people work with me, we get you in there, and then over the 2 weeks, as the baby responds to the method, how the parents are feeling, because I take all of that on board with all the knowledge that I have, I get them out. So if I got them sitting there for 2 weeks, that wouldn't change. So as the days and weeks go, then I get them out. I guide them out. And I provide with all that support of how to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, that's good.
So when do you think they should consider getting help from some kind of specialist support, or going into a mother-baby type setup, like a sleep school? When at what point do you think that someone like yourself should be called upon?
Sure. So for me, you should get all the knowledge before you have the baby. So I do expectant newborn seminars, and they're my passion. I love them because it is just a little bit of knowledge, you know. Then they go in like I did with my book. That's perfect. I really think that I wouldn't see as much. No, I would still be busy, I'm sure, but there'd be a lot of people that wouldn't get to the level that I see them at. So for me, when you're pregnant, I think get the sleep. As much as you're going to have to breastfeed or bottle or feed your baby, you need to find out the foundations of sleep 100%. For me, if anyone's hearing this, at any time we can do sleep. And usually that's at the point where you think, this is just too much. You know, like I say to mums, if they're feeding every hour of the night but they're quite enjoying that, then that's fine. But if they get to the point where they're, you know, I've had people drive in the front of the houses, go through red lights, have car accident. Like, it's quite a big thing through being so tired. Don't wait till then. So really,
somewhere in the middle there.
Somewhere in the middle. Somewhere before they get to the point where they have to call me would be good, because I feel so sad for them that they've got to implement all these things being so fatigued, you know. So.
And you're talking age zero through to what, eight?
Six or seven.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any good resources parents can turn to online, apps?
For sleep?
Yeah, for sleep.
Oh, that's a funny one. There are so many, but I just find that apps cause anxiety.
Yeah.
And again, maybe because I'm a little bit older, but I just see them and I'm like, oh my gosh,
it's
not. Yeah. And babies aren't apps.
Yeah.
Babies aren't apps.
Yeah.
So I just think the biggest thing
about white noise.
Yeah, white noise is a good prop. Good association. Yeah. White noise is good, but it has to be constant. So no nursery rhymes, no waves. It has to be shh sound.
Yeah.
So that's that. So if I was a mum just about to be a parent, I would find someone you like as a sleep specialist. If you find sleep that's important, and just follow that one person.
Yeah.
Follow that one person. Ask that one person. Implement that one person. You know, way of doing it, and just stick to that, and use your parental instinct, and don't use the apps.
Yeah.
Don't use the apps.
Yeah, okay. That's good.
Don't use the apps.
Yeah, no, it's fair. I'm trying to think if there's any other resources that I use. So I usually like the Raising Children's Network, which is Australian government website. And they do have sections on sleep. As Donna said, though, it's a very personalised thing. So what might be on there might not work for you. So don't be disheartened by that. Just think about other ways to work with your child. How do people reach out to you, Donna? If they want to contact you, there's people from all over Australia listening. So how do they contact you?
Well, I have my Instagram, Facebook and webpage. I do offer a free 15-minute consult, like a chat with myself. And I have an offsider who I've trained up to have chats with mums. So that's the way. My website, which is bubtosleep.com.au. Instagram, Facebook, you can DM me. I'll always reply to people. I'm always doing seminars. I can always do one-on-one. So
great.
That's the best place to find me because I'm always looking at that.
Yeah, good. Thanks so much for coming in and spending this time with us. Really appreciate it. Really important area. I can't believe I haven't covered this topic yet. So thank you so much. And we'll catch up again sometime.
Great. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
That's okay. Hi everyone, Andrew here. Find out more about this episode and others, as well as resources that I've found to be useful at my own new website, drandrewleach.com.